Hello, my name's Dave Emery, and in this segment, we're going to be taking a look at a recent killing, namely the slaying of Bill Cosby's only son, Ennis Cosby, and we're going to ruminate about some of the possibilities that may underlie this particular killing. I want to stress that this broadcast is, like many things that I do, speculative in nature, with a capital S and a capital N, and should be understood in that context. Nonetheless, in light of some of the recent things that have been going on in this country, and in light of some of the strange circumstances surrounding the killing of Ennis Cosby, I do think that some of the questions that I am asking and some of the hypothesizing that I'm going to be doing are absolutely necessary. In connection with the killing of Ron Goldman and Nicole Brown Simpson, I have dealt with a book entitled Blood Oath, subtitled The Conspiracy to Murder Nicole Brown Simpson. This book was co-authored by Stephen Wirth and Carl Jaspers and published in softcover by Rainbow Books, copyright 1996. This book alleges that the killing of Nicole and Ron and the framing of O.J. Simpson, and whether or not the cause white supremacist group did in fact do the killings and frame O.J. Simpson, as the book alleges, O.J. Simpson was definitely framed, and the evidence in that regard is so profound, and the coverage of this and the handling of the case so grotesquely absurd that in and of itself that should be noted. As an aside, the impossibility of O.J. Simpson having done what most people have been misled to believe he did need only be illustrated by discussing how does one take off a glove. You cannot remove a glove from somebody's hand if they don't want you to. You don't rip a glove off somebody's hand unless you tear the seams. Try removing a glove from somebody's hand when it's gripping something. Can't be done. One is then left with the notion that O.J. Simpson, what, he'd take off the glove and smite somebody across the face? Varlet? Ludicrous. There are many other aspects of the case that I've discussed in the past. I'm not going to discuss that now. However, in connection with the book Blood Oath, the authors, Stephen Wirth and Carl Jaspers, were contacted by an individual whom they codenamed Skinner. Skinner maintained that he was part of an elite white supremacist group called CAUSE, which was an acronym for Christian Aryan Underground Special Enforcers. It was Skinner's allegation that he was a member of the actual team that dispatched Ron and Nicole. He also maintained that the group pulled off the Oklahoma City bombing as well. Partially as a result of the fact that some of his fellow white supremacists lost their lives in Oklahoma City, and also some feeling of guilt over the number of people who had been killed and were going to be killed, Skinner maintains that that is why he chose to come forward and spill the beans about what he termed Operation Thunderbolt. It was Skinner's contention that Operation Thunderbolt, the killing of Nicole and Ron, and the framing of O.J. Simpson was done to A, celebrate the anniversary of the murder of Alan Berg, a Denver talk show host who was killed by the Nazi splinter group The Order in 1984, and that the timing of Operation Thunderbolt was to coincide with the 10th anniversary of the murder of Alan Berg as closely as that could be done. It was also Skinner's contention that the CAUSE group was financed by an unnamed foreign terrorist group with unlimited funds that, according to Skinner, was conducting a race war in their own part of the world that was causing problems with the United States and its allies. That suggests very strongly, although it's not definitive, that that group might have been a German Nazi group, probably with connections to the old underground Reich that I have spoken about so many times. The group, according to Skinner, was utilizing intelligence methodology and technology. These people, that is to say, the CAUSE strike team, according to Skinner, was composed of law enforcement and military and intelligence veterans, some of them with covert operations background, and they were utilizing the latest in intelligence equipment. According to Skinner, they had, and that by the way is a code name, according to Skinner, the group had OJ's and Nicole's phones and intercoms bugged, had them under physical surveillance as well as electronic surveillance involving the use of, among other things, infrared night vision equipment. It was Skinner's contention that a member of their group, an unnamed DNA and blood specialist at a hospital that O.J. had gone to have surgery, had obtained a sample of O.J. Simpson's blood and that that was planted. Among the goals of the group, in addition to, and this Operation Thunderbolt, as it was termed, in addition to observing or celebrating, quote-unquote, the 10th anniversary of Alan Berg's murder, was also to polarize race relations in the country with the ultimate aim of starting a race war, and to discredit and change the judicial system, and to discredit law enforcement in general and the LAPD in particular. It was Skinner's contention, for example, that the group had penetrated the LAPD and that an individual or individuals codenamed the Dark German, which, by the way, rhymes with Mark Furman, whether or not that's coincidence, had penetrated LAPD and that they were instrumental in shaping the investigation and pointing it in the direction of O.J. Simpson. It was also the goal of this particular operation to discredit the LAPD. It was Skinner's contention that the Laura Hart McKinney tapes were leaked to the defense in order to discredit LAPD and to further polarize the situation. I would note that for the record, and by the way, I've interviewed Stephen Wirth numerous times. There are interviews with Stephen Wirth that are available from Spitfire. There are also segments excerpted from Blood Oath that are available from Spitfire. I'll give the address, both mailing and email, later on in the program. It is in that context that I think the killing of Ennis Cosby should be scrutinized. Ennis Cosby was murdered by what appears to have been a white man for motive or motives that are unclear at best. Ennis Cosby was killed just after midnight on what would have been Martin Luther King's birthday. One of the things that Stephen Wirth and Carl Jaspers discuss in the book Blood Oath is that the CAUSE group, again, that's an acronym for Christian Aryan Underground Special Enforcers, the group that, according to Skinner anyway, killed Ron and Nicole and framed O.J. It's also Skinner's contention that they killed a music producer and nightclub owner named Brett Cantor because he refused to produce or to promote a racist rock group called Rahoa, which stands for Racial Holy War. And apparently the individual was Brett Cantor, that is, was also a victim of this group, allegedly a victim of this group, according to Skinner. The killing of Ennis Cosby took place just after midnight. Had it been a couple of hours earlier, it would have taken place on Dr. Martin Luther King's birthday. Ennis Cosby was a very successful young black man driving a Mercedes-Benz. He also, obviously, was the son of Bill Cosby. And Bill Cosby's been very active and vocal on behalf of the church burnings, the burning of black churches. I would also note that Ennis Cosby was on his way to meet a white woman. He had placed a call on a cellular phone, and he was fixing a flat tire. There are questions, as yet unresolved, about the possibility that that tire may have been deliberately sabotaged, and that the individual or individuals responsible for the killing, because there is evidence suggesting the possibility of accomplices, that they may have deliberately sabotaged Ennis Cosby's tire and monitored his cellular phone and then performed the killing. I want to emphasize again that this discussion is speculative. I do not have the answers. However, I think there are some very ominous questions that suggest themselves and that need to be answered. I also will state for the record I seriously doubt that they ever will be. The first article that we're going to examine in connection with the killing of Ennis Cosby comes from the Los Angeles Times of Friday, January 17th of 1997. This is an article from the front page of the LA Times. It is on page A20 of the Times of that day. The article is entitled, Bill Cosby's Son Slain in Apparent Robbery. Subtitled, Violence. He was shot while changing a tire near the San Diego freeway. Witness described suspect. It's by James Rainey, R-A-I-N-E-Y, and Josh Meyer, M-E-Y-E-R, of the LA Times. Police launched an intensive search Thursday for the killer who gunned down the only son of entertainer Bill Cosby as the pain of the apparently random tragedy resonated across a nation that has embraced Cosby as its preeminent family man. Authorities said they believed that Ennis William Cosby, a 27-year-old graduate student who had been the inspiration for some of his father's most touching work, had stopped early Thursday to fix a flat tire on his green Mercedes convertible when he was set upon a secluded stretch of road above Bel Air. Cosby was found on Skirball, S-K-I-R-B-A-L-L, Center Drive, near the top of the Sepulveda Pass at about 1:40 a.m. by a woman who told authorities she saw a man leaving the area. Police released only the suspect's race, describing him as a, quote, white male, unquote, but said they hoped the witness's description would lead to a composite drawing. And turning to the inside of the article and skipping down, with a police escort, the family left for an unknown location. The younger Cosby had been visiting Los Angeles, staying at his family's Pacific Palisades mansion while on vacation from his studies at Columbia University in New York. Most of the details of the crime remained a mystery late Thursday, including the identity of the female witness initially described as a, quote, passerby, unquote, who called police to the scene. The Los Angeles Police Department spokesman Tim McBride said Cosby knew the woman and was on his way to meet her when his tire went flat. According to what the woman told the investigators, quote, she came to the scene to help him change the tire and ultimately became a partial witness, unquote, McBride said. The woman, who was pursued by the media Thursday, was, quote, freaking out, unquote, and fearful the killer might retaliate against her, McBride said. She doesn't want to talk to anybody. She doesn't want any part of this. She's the only one who can identify the suspect, unquote, McBride said. This is a murder investigation. Disclosing her identity could put her at risk, unquote. Nothing the witness told police caused them to alter their initial opinion that, quote, it's a straight crime and he's a straight victim, unquote, McBride said, adding that Cosby might have been robbed. Again quoting, somebody just saw this nice car and said, there's some money here, a nice car, maybe I can get some of that, unquote. By the way, robbery does not appear to be the motive. There's nothing about this crime that suggests robbery. Nothing was taken, nothing was disturbed. And indeed, it appears that, as we shall see, that the killer never even got close to Ennis Cosby. Skipping down. In West Hollywood, at a celebration of the Reverend Martin Luther King Jr.'s birthday, a crowd that included many students gasped when U.S. Representative Maxine Waters, Democrat of Los Angeles, announced the death. Quote, I am very sad today because my dear friends are mourning not simply for Dr. Martin Luther King, said Waters, a friend of the Cosby family who spoke to the Entertainer Thursday. Quote, Bill Cosby and Camille Cosby just lost their son, Ennis Cosby. His death is painful to me and everyone who knew him, unquote. Again, note that this was a white male, who, by the way, in the composite sketch was wearing a watch cap. Note also the proximity to Martin Luther King's birthday. It would have taken place on the exact anniversary of Martin Luther King's birthday, or actually on his birthday, had the killing taken place a little bit before the time that it did. More about the killing was carried in the New York Times of Friday, January 17th of 1997. On page A8, we read the following. This is an article by B. Drummond Ayers, A-Y-R-E-S, Jr. Dateline Los Angeles, headlined, Bill Cosby's son is killed by gunman. The woman who found Ennis Cosby's body reported seeing a white male near the scene as she pulled her car to a stop behind Mr. Cosby's convertible, a police said. Again, quoting, there is a female who saw at least a portion of this, and we are interviewing her, unquote, Commander Tim McBride of the Los Angeles Police Department said in a news conference this morning at the crime scene, its periphery a swarm with reporters, camera teams, and satellite trucks. Quote, it is her description that we have a male white suspect, unquote. Commander McBride added that although robbery might well have been the motive of the shooting, an initial inspection of the car and Mr. Cosby's body showed nothing missing. The police commander also said, but did not elaborate, that Mr. Cosby might have made a cellular phone call just before being shot and might have been followed by his killer. Again, bearing in mind the allegations of Skinner, who maintains that O.J. Simpson and Nicole's phones and intercoms were bugged and that they were under physical and electronic surveillance. It's very easy to monitor a cellular phone. I wonder if perhaps, and obviously that once again this is speculative, I wonder whether perhaps the killer was monitoring the cellular phone. Indeed, that is speculation that even the authorities have engaged in. Continuing with the article. It is unknown whether he was followed at this time or not, he said. Again quoting, I think that's a good probability. But it may have been a chance opportunity that somebody took, robbery being a possible motive, unquote. Now, again, this took place well after midnight on a stretch of highway. By the way, I would also note that physically that highway is very close to Murphy Park, which, according to Skinner, was where the cause killers had a meeting shortly before Operation Thunderbolt. And again, that is the information alleged by Skinner. Continuing. Mr. Cosby was killed shortly before 2 a.m., the police said. He was driving on the city's western side, headed north on Interstate 405 when the tire went flat, and he pulled to the side of the road in Sepulveda Pass, an upscale, relatively crime-free area of Los Angeles. So again, if in fact what Skinner has to say is accurate, and if in fact there is any connection between Operation Thunderbolt or the group that pulled it off and the killing of Ennis Cosby, again, the son of Bill Cosby, who was going to meet with a white woman and who was killed just past midnight on what would have been Bill Cosby's Martin Luther King's birthday. Again, I wonder whether perhaps we're looking at some of the same methodology and some of the same motivation. And yet again, I want to stress this is speculative. A listener gleaned the following from the Los Angeles Times electronic version on the LA Times webpage. By the way, the LA Times webpage is www.latimes.com. Once again, that's www.latimes.com. This is an article by Jim Newton, Matt Late, L-A-I-T, and James Rainey, R-A-I-N-E-Y, of the L.A. Times. It's headlined, Two Questioned as Possible Cosby Witnesses. And skipping down, we read the following. The tire of Cosby's car is being examined to determine whether it may have been sabotaged, but McBride said analysis of the tire still is not complete. Although he said the tire does not appear to have been shot, police have not ruled out that possibility. Other sources said police also have not come to any conclusion about whether cuts in the tire suggest that it was slashed or merely damaged after deflating. How the tire was flattened is important because it could offer a clue as to whether Cosby was set upon by an opportunistic robber who saw him stranded by the road or set up by someone who might have known him or at least seen him earlier in the evening. Again, the tire of Cosby's car is being examined to determine whether it may have been sabotaged, but McBride said analysis of the tire still is not complete. Although he said the tire does not appear to have been shot, police have not ruled out that possibility. Other sources said police also have not come to any conclusion about whether cuts in the tire suggest that it was slashed or merely damaged after deflating. How the tire was flattened is important because it could offer a clue as to whether Cosby was set upon by an opportunistic robber who saw him stranded by the road or set up by someone who might have known him or at least seen him earlier in the evening. In addition, Cosby's cellular phone records are being retrieved to see whether, in the hour before the shooting, he called the woman who thus far is the LAPD's principal witness. That woman, according to sources, told police that she came to the scene after Cosby called to say he had a flat tire. She told authorities that as she waited nearby in her car, a man approached her and frightened her, either by tapping on her window or displaying a gun. By the way, other accounts have discussed this individual as telling her basically to get lost. One of the reasons, we'll go on further. Robbery, although this was what the authorities initially had to say, does not appear to me to be the motive. Skipping down, by the way, your research credit on the following also goes to a listener. This also from the LA Times electronic version. This is from the LA Times of January 23rd of 1997. It's headlined, Killer May Not Have Gotten Close to Cosby. Again, this is by Jim Newton and John J. Goldman of the LA Times. It reads in part as follows. Mounting evidence suggests that the killer of Ennis Cosby shot him without coming into close contact with his victim, a scenario that would make the police investigation more difficult because it reduces the chance that trace evidence will connect a suspect to the crime. Among the clues that sources say suggest a lack of close contact, there was nothing obviously missing from Cosby's car. The area surrounding Cosby's vehicle was relatively undisturbed, suggesting along with other physical evidence that he died without a struggle, and fingerprints lifted from his car have yet to yield any matches to likely suspects. Although a number of fingerprints were taken from Cosby's car, sources said that none of those tested so far match computerized criminal fingerprints. That is discouraging to authorities because investigators believe any culprit capable of committing a cold-blooded crime, such as Cosby's killing, is likely to have previously been in trouble with the law. Skipping down, police said they are still not sure whether the killer stumbled upon Ennis Cosby early last Thursday as he changed a flat tire on a dark road near the top of the Sepulveda Pass, or whether the tire was sabotaged earlier with the suspect following him until it went flat. Detectives hope the answer to that riddle will emerge from expert analysis of the tire, which was cut and damaged. Well, again, if the individual did not come into close contact with Cosby, shot him once in the head, which he did, at a fairly distant range, that does not sound like robbery at all, but rather like an execution. I would also note that it's unlikely that someone who was going to kill someone during the course of a robbery, bungled or otherwise, would have allowed another witness who saw him at close range to have escaped, this killer apparently did. Note again that Bill Cosby, or Ennis Cosby rather, was going to meet with a white woman at this particular time. Note also that white supremacist groups are obviously very disturbed at relationships between people of different races. Another interesting detail, perhaps not significant, but interesting, comes from the San Francisco Examiner of Friday, January 17th of 1997. This is an article from the front page of the Examiner. It is entitled, Hunt is on for Killer of Cosby's Only Son. Police have subtitled, Police have two witnesses believe roadside attack was a fouled-up robbery. It's by Steve James of Reuters, and it's Dateline, Los Angeles. And skipping down into the story, we read, the woman, again, that's the white woman that Ennis Cosby was going to meet, a woman named Stephanie Crane. Actually, her last name was Crane, I believe, first name Stephanie. The woman saw, quote, at least a portion of this, and we are interviewing her, unquote, Police Commander Tim McBride said. The identity of the woman seen in television footage wearing a fur coat and high-heeled shoes was being protected by police. The woman was actually the person Cosby was en route to visit, according to a KCBS-TV report. He called her by cellular phone at 1:15 a.m. and asked her to come help him light the area. She arrived shortly after the shooting and called police about 1:30 a.m., the station said, citing unidentified sources. The station would not disclose her name, saying only that she was in her 40s, lived in Los Angeles, and was in entertainment. Police sources said a second witness was in the area at the time of the killing. Police later cordoned off the nearby Cosby family home in upscale Pacific Palisades. A man who identified himself as Bill Cosby's brother-in-law allowed detectives to enter the house despite no search warrant, said Detective Roseanne Perino. Police barred anyone from entering the house, including family, for fear of contaminating possible evidence, Perino said. Los Angeles police, who have been heavily criticized recently for the handling of high-profile crimes, including the O.J. Simpson double murder case, said robbery appeared to be the motive. Bill Cosby and his wife Camille, who also have four daughters, were in New York when their son was killed. Well, again, I want to note that the police entered the home without a warrant, and this may not have any significance. One of the things that Skinner alleges in Blood Oath, however, is that the cause group, in keeping with the operational principle of acquiring specialized knowledge and abilities that I discussed in an 8-part series by that name, in which I discussed the tactic of white supremacist groups of infiltrating the police and national security establishments of various countries in order to acquire the, quote, specialized knowledge and abilities, unquote, to overthrow the state, and also to compromise the functioning of those institutions and to direct them in the direction they want. One of the things Skinner maintains in Blood Oath is that, in fact, the cause group, the white supremacist group, had heavily infiltrated LAPD and was able to direct the investigation in the direction of O.J. Simpson. Again, I have no firsthand knowledge of any of the people involved with the Ennis Cosby investigations, and I don't want to cast aspersions on them. Rather, however, I think as a methodological consideration, one has to wonder, given the history of penetration not only of LAPD but other police forces and the military and intelligence services by elements like this, whether perhaps bugs or something of that kind might have been removed from Ennis Cosby's home. Again, are from the Pacific Palisades home. Again, I'm not stating that happened, but the circumstances surrounding this case with possible sabotage of Ennis Cosby's car, he's going to meet a white woman almost on the anniversary of Martin Luther King's birthday, the son of an African-American who perhaps along with O.J. Simpson had gained the most acceptance from middle white America. Again, think of two black people who have gained more acceptance from middle white America than Bill Cosby and O.J. Simpson had. I don't think this is an unreasonable question to ask in connection with the case. And again, I'm not stating that is the case, but I think it's a reasonable question to ask. I also want to note that whether or not it's a coincidence, at this very same time, an attempt at extorting money from Bill Cosby surfaced, and a woman who maintains she was his illegitimate daughter attempted to gain money from Bill Cosby. Cosby denies that she was his daughter, however, acknowledges having had an affair with her mother a long time ago. Again, there are coincidences in this world, and I don't want to maintain that there aren't, but having this tawdry bit of Bill Cosby's past emerging at the same time as his son is killed, I think raises some interesting questions. If some of my ruminations concerning the possibility of the O.J. Simpson case as a domestic psyop by a Nazi element of our national security establishment are correct, I wonder whether perhaps the same thing might be the case in connection with Ennis Cosby, again, destroying the reputation of Bill Cosby at the same time as killing his son, who was going to meet a white woman. I wonder whether perhaps that might have been the goal here as well. And once again, I want to stress this is speculative. I'm not saying this is. I'm asking the question, is it?
More about the killing of Ennis Cosby. This from the San Francisco Chronicle of Saturday, January 18th of 1997. This is an L.A. Times story, Dateline Los Angeles, headlined, Hunt Widens for Killer of Cosby's Son. And it reads in part as follows, skipping down. In Los Angeles, police were still struggling to understand why Ennis Cosby, by all accounts a likable, warm, serious young man, was gunned down by the side of the road. A graduate at Columbia University in New York City, he was in Los Angeles finishing up a two-week vacation. We have, Williams said, no suspects at this time. The intense importance of the principal witness is emphasized by how gingerly the Los Angeles Police Department treated her statements. At first, Williams said she was a witness to a homicide, then said she had witnessed, quote, some portion of the homicide, period. He would not clarify whether that meant he had seen the assailant actually pull the trigger, or whether she merely had seen the attacker either approaching or leaving the area. Investigators had previously said that Ennis Cosby called the woman on his cellular phone and asked for her help in repairing his flat tire on a dark roadway near the top of Sepulveda Pass, which links the west side and the San Fernando Valley. She came to help illuminate the area with her headlights, but told police the gunman arrived before the job was completed, sources said. Although officers described her as rattled by the killing and the overwhelming attention she has received, they said yesterday that they have no reason to disbelieve her story. The woman was so upset by the crime and ensuing crush of attention by the media, including one camera crew standing guard on her lawn, that investigators were having trouble calming her in order to obtain a sketch of the suspect, Williams said. The witness was very traumatized by the event and the public exposure that occurred yesterday, Thursday, unquote. Williams said, quote, we're working with her and our graphic artist to make sure that when we have a sketch available, that it's something that's good and is really focused towards one individual, unquote. And again, note the traumatized witness. And again, I wonder what kind of pressure might be being exerted on her behind the scenes. I'm not saying pressure has been exerted, but the behavior of some of the white supremacist elements within LAPD that has come into focus in recent years, and which Skinner alleges were heavily involved in the Operation Thunderbolt, the killing of Nicole and Ron, and the framing of OJ. Again, I wonder, because people who had exculpatory evidence in the OJ Simpson case were in fact threatened with death. And I wonder whether perhaps this woman also has been threatened if, and I want to stress if with a capital I, some of my hypothesizing is accurate. Reading now from the San Jose Mercury News of Saturday, January 18th of 1997. Once again, an AP story, Dateline Los Angeles, headlined, Witness in Cosby Case Too Traumatized to Help, subtitled Probe. Police have not been able to develop a sketch of the killer of the comedian's son. A witness in the homicide case of Bill Cosby's son is too traumatized to help investigators produce a sketch of the killer, Police Chief Willie Williams said Friday. This is an individual who witnessed a homicide, Williams told reporters at a police headquarters news conference. He refused to clarify whether that meant she had seen all or part of Ennis William Cosby slaying, or simply just the killer. By the way, a composite sketch was eventually produced showing a white man between the ages of 25 and 30, according to the authorities, with a watch cap on, interestingly enough. Perhaps there's no significance to that. Again, I wonder if with a capital I, Skinner's allegations concerning the killing of Ron and Nicole and the Oklahoma City situation are accurate. I wonder whether perhaps similar elements operating for similar reasons might have been present in connection with the Bill Cosby case. And as or the Ennis Cosby case, I wonder, too, whether perhaps a Nazi faction of our national security establishment might have been engaging in this as a psyop, ultimately pointing towards the final solution to the Negro problem, quote unquote, something I've referenced in other broadcasts. And by the way, I can appreciate that that would appear to be utter madness to the uninitiated. I will give the address, etc., for Spitfire in the next segment that airs on this station. We are all out of time. My name's Dave Emery. Thanks for listening.